This podcast is brought to you by WEDI, the preeminent national membership association for health IT guidance and collaboration. Recognized and trusted as a formal advisor to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, WEDI is the leading authority on the use of health IT to efficiently improve health information exchange, enhance care quality, and reduce cost. To learn more about WEDI member benefits and educational offerings, please visit our website, wedi.org. Welcome to the Collective Voice of Health IT, a WEDI podcast. Hey everyone, welcome back. It's Mike McNutt with WEDI. Now more than ever, as more employees are working remotely or just not in an office setting, there's a greater scrutiny on not only the security of the devices that they're using, but their overall employee satisfaction. Is it better in the office? Is it better at home? Is it better in this basement office that I'm in back here in Chantilly, Virginia? Well, to talk about that today, we're welcoming back a former guest, Dennis O'Shea, the founder and chairman of Mobile Mentor, a global leader in endpoint ecosystem. Founded in 2004, Mobile Mentor has enabled over 1 million people to be more secure and more productive with their laptops, tablets, smartphones, apps, all those devices. Mobile Mentor just recently completed its 2024 endpoint ecosystem study. We actually had Dennis back 2 years ago to talk about the 2022 study. The study explores the intricate dynamics of hybrid work in high-risk and highly regulated industries, like healthcare. Dennis, welcome back to the Collective Voice of Health IT.
Thank you, Michael. Such a pleasure to be on the show with you again, and thanks for having me as your guest.
My pleasure.
Sharing with you what we've learned and what's changed in the meantime.
Exactly. I'm very interested to hear about this study. So before we begin, let's take a step back and let's help define endpoint ecosystem to the audience.
Sure. Endpoint ecosystem. The word endpoint is a bit of jargon. It's a bit of IT jargon. It basically means your device and all the software that runs on it and your ability to sign in and, you know, get working. So that's a bit of jargon. The ecosystem, really, we think about all the devices you use in your job. So you might have a desktop, you might have a laptop, you might have a tablet, smartphone. Some of them are owned by your employer. Some of them are personal. And you've got passwords you manage, and you've got all this stuff going on, and probably in your home environment, and sometimes you're at work, sometimes you're traveling. All those devices and how they all come together and set you up to be a productive employee, that's your endpoint ecosystem.
That would also
include...
And it's
different for every employee.
Yes, but that would also include, I just thought, Wi-Fi routers, correct? Your internet in your house is part of it.
Dead right, because when you're in the office, you're on a secure Wi-Fi network, presumably. When you're at home, you're now on a consumer-grade Wi-Fi network, which is totally different from a security perspective.
Yep.
But that's the reality. You know, people at home are on their consumer-grade Wi-Fi router.
Yep. And since, I mean, back in 2022, we were just leaving peak pandemic, and now we're kind of hopefully continuing on the way down. What were some of the things you recall, whether it's part of the system, part of the study, or just working at Mobile Mentor, that you recall from as we were leaving the pandemic? What were some of the things you noticed regarding remote working from a security perspective and also from an overall personal satisfaction perspective from the folks that you studied?
My recollection is that most organizations had gone above and beyond to try and equip people to work from home. There was all this extra mile effort that went into just enable people to get set up during the pandemic.
Yeah.
That started to fade, and we started to get back to kind of BAU ways of working. Mm. And what we've seen since then is some of the behaviors and support and things put in place during the pandemic have completely fallen away.
Wow.
And there's been some gaps have opened up now. So the research we did 2 years ago showed that employees were getting a lot of love and support from IT to make sure that we're working well. Now we're seeing that a lot of that's gone.
Oh, wow.
And that there's been cutbacks and changes in a number of areas. And in particular, we're always interested in the balance between security and employee experience.
Exactly.
And how you get that balance right, in a way that you're not incentivizing employees to go and find workarounds, and you're not setting the organization up so it's going to get hacked.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also not want to make sure that your employees working at home or working remotely are not the weakest link.
Yep.
Likely to cause you a breach or some incident.
Okay. Excellent. Walk me through the endpoint ecosystem study. Where was it conducted? How was it conducted? Break down a little bit of the background
Sure.
on the overall study.
So healthcare was the vertical we focused most on. So we got most respondents in the healthcare vertical. Also finance, education, and government. So all four industries are highly regulated. And, you know, in theory, should have their house in order when it comes to security and privacy and all those things.
Yeah.
The data tells us otherwise. And the research was done in the United States, United Kingdom, and Australia. So a reasonably global perspective for three different distinct geographies. And we had about 2,400 people go through the research and share with us what they're doing and how they're working in their environments. And I guess one of the key things that came out as a headline is remote work. The dynamics of remote work actually did not change in the last 2 years. So same percentage of people are working at home in their basement like yourself, or me in the old nursery in our house, and the same percentage of people working in the office 2-3 days a week. So nothing to see in terms of the dynamics of hybrid work. But there's been an enormous shift in how people feel about where they work, how they work, an enormous shift in their attitudes towards security and their personal privacy and their productivity and their attitudes towards their own company and their company culture. So the shifts were all psychographic rather than demographic, you could say, in the way hybrid work has played out over the last couple of years.
Very, very interesting. Now, some of the endpoint highlights from 2024, and you referenced them just briefly, employees in all industries and across all generations feel they are more productive in an office environment than at home, which is interesting. It makes sense. You have a lot of distractions at home, but I always think that it's kind of interesting you say that. The study says that, but then the personal well-being and they're caring less about their work and job satisfaction. Like, that seems an interesting dichotomy there, that I'm going into the office, but I care more about my personal well-being / work-life balance. So how do you guys, when you see these kind of results pop in, is it a lot of head scratching, or is it like we're trying to figure out why is this?
Oh, it's a lot of head scratching. We've got 180,000 data points. So we're still unpacking and digesting and interpreting and trying to understand the data and synthesize what different things mean when we take them together. But the first one around people feeling like they would be more productive in an office, it doesn't mean they're actually going into the office more often. What it means is that they don't feel like they were set up for success in their home environment to be as productive as they could be in an office environment. And that sounds counterproductive. You know, when we read other studies that tell us that people would accept a pay decrease for the privilege of working remotely, not having to commute, not having to park in a city, not having to pay for overpriced lunches and all that. People perceive remote work as a privilege and as a perk. But what the data is telling us is that the onboarding experience for remote employees is really clunky, and getting tech support is poor. And all the metrics on that have deteriorated in the last 2 years, like getting a response from IT, getting an issue resolved by IT. They've all gone downhill in the last 2 years. And then people's use of self-service tools have gone downhill. So we look at how people were onboarded and we slice the data by people who were onboarded in an office environment and people who were onboarded remotely. And those who were onboarded remotely had a really poor experience compared to those who were onboarded in an office where they can just walk up to John in IT and say, "Hey, John, I don't have access to this thing. Can you fix it for me?"
Yeah.
The person at home has to raise yet another ticket. They have to wait. They try have to get in the queue. They're not having a great experience. And so the result after, you know, days of trying and multiple tickets, they're feeling like, I'd be better off in the office, in an office environment. And that's just the beginning of their journey.
Yep.
And that plays out throughout their journey.
Or, as your study mentions, a lot more people are trying to find workarounds. So instead of, oh, I'm having this problem getting into this particular site or getting this particular, you know, job done, this task completed, oh, I can work around. But when you do workarounds, that leaves you vulnerable to possible security issues.
Absolutely. So this was one of the biggest things, was finding that security is overweight from the perspective of the employee. And one of the most horrific things we found in the data is 53% of people believe they could be more effective and productive with Dropbox and Gmail than the tools provided by their employer. So, you know, if you're an organization, you've invested heavily in Microsoft 365 and all those collaboration and security and productivity tools, this is terrible.
Yeah.
If employees feel that Dropbox and Gmail would serve them better. And what we found when we dug into the data is that people feel restricted by their security policies. And there was incredible correlation between feeling restricted and admitting to finding workarounds. And in the US, it was 51% of people said, I feel restricted by my company's security policies, and 52% admitted to finding workarounds. Mm-hmm. So this is the genesis of shadow IT. This is why and where people go off and find other ways of doing things, because they're simply hindered by whatever tool set and restrictions and policies are put in front of them by their own employer. And so they're finding ways around the system, yeah, which is increasing the risk profile.
I see that a lot. Sometimes I get emails from folks from a work environment, and it's an encrypted email. Well, number one, I rarely see those, so my red flag goes up, but it's legit. But I have to go through all these different steps just to literally get an email to say, I won't be able to make it to today's meeting. It's like, you know, like, so I'm, so you're right. It is, it, and that's not even, you know, that's my day-to-day operation, my work. So it becomes a frustrating process when I'm having an email conversation with this person back and forth, and every email is a secured, encrypted email that I have to click, type in my phone number so I can get a code and put the code in. So yeah, it's very...
That's a great example. Yeah, that's a great example of the balance being out of kilter. Mm-hmm. It's out of kilter with that, clearly. We found a whole bunch of examples where we've got opposite things. We've got the balance is out of kilter in favor of the employee. So one good example there is if you think of someone's home office environment, and you know the frame of reference for this research was if you could stand outside someone's home office and peek in the window and look at all the different devices on their desk and know which ones are personal, which ones are work, how they're signing in, where they're sharing passwords, where they're sharing data, what's the mashup that's happening on their desk of personal and work. And password management, or what we call a password hygiene, it's a bombshell. Mm-hmm. It's a disaster what's going on. Now, healthcare providers in the hospital setting have done a good job with things like Improvada for single sign-on to clinical applications. That's fine. But for knowledge workers, we've got a major problem, because what the data tells us is that a huge percentage of people are putting their work passwords on their personal phones, just in notes on their phones. Mm-hmm. And we know in healthcare, those phones are unmanaged, right? They're not secure. They're not managed. And yet people are putting their work passwords on them. And then they're using notebooks to write down their passwords as well. And saving passwords in the browser. And the browser password manager is not encrypted. So we've got a whole bunch of behaviors. And some of them have changed since 2022. So we've got Gen Z in particular, which we're very, very interested in, because they are the future. Mm-hmm. So the more we understand Gen Z's preferences, attitudes, behaviors, perceptions, the better we can predict tomorrow and what's going to happen in the future. So we look at how Gen Z has changed in the last 2 years. And guess what? Gen Z is using secure online password management tools less now than they were 2 years ago. And more of them are writing their passwords in a personal journal or saving them on their phones than 2 years ago.
Wow.
So here's the future of nursing. Are the future of you know, providers, and doing less of the right thing with password management and more of the wrong thing. Mm. And the way we look at it is we need to own this problem. We're the adults in the room.
Yeah.
We're the ones onboarding them and trying to set them up for success. We need to fix this before it becomes, you know, a major.
But before I ask more about Gen Z, I wanted to ask about tech support. One of the studies you had mentioned that folks are frustrated because remotely tech support, like you said, I could just go down to the third floor, hand my laptop and say something's wrong. But remotely, I have to go through a ticket process. On the other side of this, are you guys finding, because this is an international study, are there more companies outsourcing their tech support? So it's no longer brick and mortar. It's kind of like, you know, they have to kind of remote jump into your computer, which could cause all sorts of issues there. Is there any issues regarding outsourcing of tech support, not in a typical brick and mortar facility, but it's off somewhere else where a company has to? I mean, I know an old company of mine, tech support was in another country with another time zone. So sometimes when I'd fill out a ticket, they weren't working. So I'd have to wait a full day for them to even receive the ticket And then they ask me a question, and they might be asking me a question at a time that I'm not working. So it became this insane, like, kind of back and forth dance for about 5 days. Whereas if it was, you know, locally tech support, if it was in a brick and mortar tech support, it'd be something different. Is your study coming up with anything regarding outsourcing of tech support?
The study itself didn't, but I know anecdotally from my own work in the industry, you got the full spectrum here. Mm-hmm. And we've got clients who outsourced all their support to the Philippines or India and got questionable results because there was resistance and there was challenges with that. The ones who have got really good results are those who augmented their in-house teams with complementary teams mm-hmm. in India or the Philippines. So they said every team, say five people on a team, you're going to get five more people in India or Philippines helping with coding or back-end work or tickets or developing workflows or whatever. So augmenting existing teams mm-hmm. with offshore resources seems to work a lot better than just outsourcing the whole thing
yeah.
and hoping and praying you're going to get a better result than you could with it fully onshore.
Yep, having a strong backup plan instead of correct. Your primary plan. Got it.
Correct.
We're chatting with Dennis O'Shea with Mobile Mentor on the Collective Voice of Health IT, talking about the Endpoint Ecosystem Study 2024, all about security, all about remote working, all about personal satisfaction. Now, let's talk about this personal satisfaction piece even before I get into the Gen Z. The big highlight pretty much that's listed as one of the top highlights from the study in 2024 is that people care more about their personal well-being and care less about their work and job satisfaction, which was a significant change from 2022. Let's talk a little bit about that. You know, what did your group, when they saw that, what happened in the past 2 years that made people suddenly think, hey, you know, I care about my work-life balance, I care about my personal well-being, and care less about their work and the job satisfaction?
We think it's the isolation factor. Mm-hmm. So we asked a set of questions to understand how often people meet work colleagues in person. Mm. And the results from the US were quite shocking. We saw in the UK and Australia, people still meet their work colleagues on a fairly frequent basis, mm-hmm. not in the US.
Yeah.
Probably because of the size of the geography and how expensive it is to get people together. So we've got a new phenomenon opening up now in the US, or has been developing the last couple of years, where people are at home in their home office doing their thing, working remotely and not meeting colleagues in the way they used to pre-pandemic. And so they're more and more isolated. It's all about me in my home office and my setup. And if I want to change jobs, it's as simple as taking a new laptop out of a box, putting my old laptop in another FedEx box and sending it off. And I sit in the same seat at the same desk with the same couple of monitors. And I eat the same lunch in my kitchen every day and I drink the same coffee. Nothing changes. I'm just talking to different people on my Zoom calls or my Teams mm-hmm. calls. But my world has shrunk as a full-time remote employee. It's just about me and my devices and my home office. And so what we saw was a huge shift towards focus being on personal well-being. And the really alarming part of this was a lot less focus and interest on company culture. Mm-hmm. Because company culture is this remote, abstract thing now, because people are sitting in the home office, they see their boss and their colleagues, and they experience our culture through a couple of screens. And that's it, because they're not meeting people in person, they're not doing team building events, not doing as many kickoffs and all that mm-hmm. stuff. And we asked people to force rank five things. The five things were job satisfaction, pay and benefits, personal well-being, ability to work remotely, and company culture. And number one by a country mile was personal well-being. Like, it just stood out so strong. And last was company culture. And second last was company culture as well. Mm-hmm. So people care about me, and a lot less about the organization I belong to and that I'm working for and the fabric of this organization. It's an abstract thing.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Yeah, it becomes less and less reality. For example, you know, Weedy, we meet twice a year as a company.
Good.
Yeah, twice a year, once in July and one in October. A lot of us are kind of spread out, but we do meet constantly on you know, Zoom. But I find that interesting because now let's talk about Gen Z, which I always feel is such a stronger social and communal generation than maybe previous generations that focus on the me. I don't know. I'm not a sociologist, so I don't know. Is Gen Z typically a me generation, or are they more kind of a let's get together, be social, communal generation? And if so, will the 2026, 2028, 2030 endpoint ecosystem studies shift more toward a culture that's going to be created by these young people who are now getting older into the workplace?
Good question. I've got two of them in my own house to observe, so a sample size of two Gen Zs. But more importantly, we've got data from a much, much larger sample size. And what we can see from Gen Z is they got off to a really rough start.
Oh,
they joined the workforce during the pandemic. They were told stay at home and work remotely. So they missed out on all the contextual understanding mm-hmm. of work and how work happens and how relationships get developed at work through all the informal conversations that used to happen at the water cooler or going for drinks on a Friday or going for lunch with colleagues and just understanding what other people in the business do.
Yeah.
Because their work life has been restricted to the small number of people they see on video calls mm-hmm. and they've missed out on all that broad contextual understanding. So they've had a very rough start. And the data shows us that they prefer to work at home more than other generations. Mm-hmm. They will take that opportunity to stay at home. They have the strongest views about feeling productive in an office. They think they will be more productive in an office, but they don't seem to want to go there. Mm-hmm. And then when we look at their attitudes, oh my God, there's some incredible surprises. So we ask people, how much do you care about protection of your private data?
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine the older generations all rated that pretty high.
Yep.
Gen Z did not. They had a pretty relaxed approach to protection of their personal data. And we think that's because they've already given their soul away to TikTok and Facebook and Instagram. And they basically said, you can have everything about me, my entire social graph, all my contacts, my location, what I like, what I click, what I view, what I watch, what I comment, what all that. I'm giving it all away for free. So you can use, so I can use your app.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got the super casual attitude to personal data. Guess what? They're bringing that to work now.
Yeah.
They've got a super casual attitude to work data and company security. And we know that because we asked them, how important is protection of company data to you? And Gen Z said, not really. Mm-hmm. And the boomers and older generation said, yes, very important.
Yeah.
So Gen Z stands out as having this relaxed or casual approach to data protection. They also have the most passwords. And as I mentioned earlier, they're writing their passwords on notebooks and their personal phones. And they need the most tech support.
Yep.
Well, so they've got unique challenges.
Oftentimes, even, I don't even have to type in a password. Sometimes I just use my face. So it's already built into my device. So if that device is hacked, I find that interesting with Gen Z. They have this, and with healthcare data, that's a very sensitive situation to just be like, I don't care, take all the information. I'm fine with it. As long as I can use this app, I'll give you everything I want. So it's going to be interesting having you back in a couple of years, if this podcast is still going on, to see how Gen Z has evolved, if they're still kind of laissez-faire with their data and how they treat company data, or will something occur where they're finally like, okay, I can't keep doing this.
That's a good point. Something may occur. Like Australia, we got very different answers from Australia than other countries because there were a couple of very high profile privacy hacks or breaches mm-hmm. in Australia, which forced a lot of the population to get a new passport or a new driver's license.
Wow.
They were very high profile and that forced a real reckoning mm-hmm. in Australia. So that altered the psychology of a whole country and that shows up in the data. That may happen in other countries. I hope not, but it may cause a new way of thinking about our data and our company data over the next couple of years. But to your point, Gen Z is flooding the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
We can't get enough of them. The boomer generation is retiring at the rate of 10,000 people per day. Mm-hmm. And they've got all the wisdom and the institutional knowledge. And they've built a lot of the companies and the healthcare providers in the world we live in, and they're retiring very quickly. There are not enough millennials to fill their shoes, mm-hmm. and there are not enough Gen Zs to fill the millennial shoes. So we've got a demographic challenge opening up in our society. We need every single Gen Z person to be successful. We can't afford for them not to be or to kind of fall by the wayside. So we're super interested in seeing how they evolve, and we're going to do this research every 2 years until, I think, 2034, because that's the year in which Gen Z would be the dominant cohort in the workforce. Mm. They will run, you know, most businesses. And so the more we understand them and track them and learn to set them up for success, mm-hmm. the more successful we will all be.
I wanted to say that you're scaring me with the whole idea that they're going to be in charge of things sooner than later. But, you know, hey, it happens. It happens.
It will. And look, it happened before. You might recall going to conferences 20 years ago and hearing very unkind things said about the millennial generation mm-hmm. and how problematic and difficult they were. Look at what they have done. They have built the digital infrastructure that runs our lives. Mm-hmm. They've built the most valuable companies in the world. All the internet companies, all the social media, all the software platforms we use. AI was built by the millennial generation, despite all the horrible things that were said about them.
Yep.
So, you know, we need to stand back and think, what can Gen Z do when they come into the workforce with their unique set of skills and mm-hmm. attributes? And they grew up with gaming, they grew up with social media. They will bring a totally different way of thinking to the workforce. What will they create?
Oh, fingers crossed it's something good. Fingers crossed it's not just healthcare turned into TikTok. As an old guy here, just yelling at the clouds. But Dennis, thank you so much. This was a fantastic conversation. How can people get the information about the Endpoint Ecosystem Study of 2024?
The study is on a website called endpoint-ecosystem.com. It's endpoint-ecosystem.com. The study is there. And then my company, Mobile Mentor, we're a managed service provider, an IT managed service provider. We specialize in helping organizations get that balance right between security and employee experience for organizations who have a hybrid workforce. So that's where we come in and help. But the research is something we do and we put out there for everyone to learn from because of some great insights in it. And everybody can take something away.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Thanks once again. And though you do this every 2 years, I'd love to have you back sooner than that so we can talk more about remote working. We can talk more about security and those darn Gen Zers out there. Come on. Come on. Get yourselves together. Yeah. This has been the Collective Voice of Health IT, a Weedy podcast, where the healthcare IT community connects, collaborates, and creates solutions for a better health system. Find all our episodes as well as information on our association at our website, wedi.org. Thank you for joining us, and be safe.